From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Sarah Fischko, and these are the Fischko Files. Each week I put together a personal essay on music, art, culture, or media. You can hear all of the Fischko Files, plus some of my one-hour documentaries and special programs on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. So please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
The notes were always there, asserts composer Tanya Leon. Musicians came later.
It's like Michelangelo, you know, doing the David out of the marble. The marble was there. The David came out of his imagination. So music is of the imagination as well. That's my own understanding of how the whole thing works.
Tanya Leon heard classical music for the first time at age 4 in her birthplace, Havana, where mostly cha-chas and mambos fill the air. She became obsessed with the classical sound and went to Miami and then New York to be a classical pianist, a conductor, and later a composer of classical music. She's now widely known internationally for her compositions. One of her musical fascinations has been rhythm, and further, polyrhythmia, the existence of several rhythmic strains in a piece all at the same time, rhythms working against each other and with each other.
If you have layers of rhythm running simultaneously, that conversation among them creates what we call nowadays polyrhythmia.
Polyrhythmia was first heard in the West in the 14th century in French secular songs, as far as anyone knows. When Leon refers to that conversation it creates, she means it. She believes it first appeared in song because it was a form of imitation, wherever it's been heard. Polyrhythmia, says Tanya Leon, imitates speech.
Two different individuals, they never talk with the same rhythm, and the gestures don't correspond. So when you start imitating that in the arts, you try to translate or transcribe.
So in her view, it's the most natural thing in the world to have 2, 3, or 5, or 10 rhythms moving simultaneously across a musical staff. The idea finally and famously returned to classical music in the early part of the 20th century, in what is now a celebrated modernist moment.
Perhaps the first blatant, you know, king of the Platonism was Stravinsky with the Rite of Spring, which they are so primitive. Yeah, but, oh, hello. It had been there all along, you know. The only thing is that he was the one that made the decision to say, okay, I'm going to use it and bring it forth. You know what happened? Everybody rejected because no one was used to it. To have that, I mean, a symphonic orchestra charged with a percussive attitude in such a massive way, no wonder everybody reacted the way that they reacted.
Well, not everybody reacted that way. The influence of the Rite of Spring among musicians was heard far and wide. In Mexico, for example, one particular composer was thinking along similar lines.
Numero uno for me is Silvestre Revueltas, which have been recently discovered in a way. And perhaps because now is that we're ready to understand all of that presentation of rhythm.
This is the Revueltas piece, Sensa Maya.
There's another piece called Homage to García Lorca that he wrote for the funeral, you know, when he found out that García Lorca, you know, was dead. That last movement is just amazing, what is going on simultaneously. Because it's not only rhythmically, but also the pitch content in order to lace all of that rhythmic drive is tremendous. And you have to be very adept to hear what's going on, because at first, if you're not used to, you said, oh my God, what a mess, you know? It demonstrates a certain energy that is as forceful as the energy that we were talking about with the Rite of Spring.
Both Revueltas and Stravinsky did a boldly sophisticated thing. They looked backward to an old technique and made it modern, which is somewhat mysterious, how something so old, dating back to the 14th century and before, can sound so contemporary and be so shocking and so familiar all at once.
Something might be very old, but it becomes very new to one if we didn't have the contact with that. However, the traces are so apparent, you hear it right away, and you feel very comfortable with it, because we are a continuation of the past, in a way.
For Tanya León, it's the multiple rhythms that hammer out the messages, and it's the musicians who hear the messages, capture them, and place them one against the other.
We are all mixing, you know? The cultures are dialoguing. The tools are there. We are the ones that decide when to use them or not.
Which brings us back to speech and the idea, Tanya León's idea, that in music, especially now, we're all speaking to one another across centuries, across boundaries. The language, the notes, were always there. Composing is just figuring out a way to put them together. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko. Thanks for listening to the Fishko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member today at WNYC.org. See you next week for another installment of Fishko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio.